Hey trail runners, welcome to episode 11 of the Trail Runners Experience. On today's episode, I am talking with Mick Keat, a local South Australian runner who has a fairly impressive repertoire of trail races under his belt, and he is a hill climbing machine. And he sat down with me and to talk about a recent trip to Europe that included the infamous Eiger 101. So sit back and enjoy the episode. Okay, so I'm sitting here with Mick Keat, La Sportiva athlete and Adelaide-based runner. He has just returned from a huge adventure over in Europe. And he's come to sit down with us today and to talk about his running career. And so, Mick, welcome. How are you going?
Yeah, good. All good. Fighting fit. Yeah. As you say, just come back from holiday. So it's been nice and hot over in Europe and come back to hailing, raining, cold Adelaide. But yeah. Roll on summer.
That's it. Now, you're a long way from summer right now. Even though spring's only a few weeks away, you wouldn't think so. So you said you went on a holiday. It's a bit more than a holiday, though, wasn't it? So what were you doing in Europe?
Yeah, so I always base my holidays around an event. So I asked my wife, where do you want to go? She picks the place where she wants to go, and then I hunt down a race and do the race first.
Nice.
And then we shoot off on holiday. So she wanted to go to Switzerland. There's a race over there called Eiger, Eiger 101. It's got 6,700 metres climbing, so it's quite steep.
100 kilometres?
Yeah, 101 k's. Yep.
Over 6,700 metres.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, which is a lot of climbing. Compared to UTA, which is about 4,400.
Which is considered still a fair bit of climbing. Yeah.
Quite steep.
Yeah, and so how did you go? Short question.
Yeah, good. Yeah. It was a good day. I think I trained appropriately for it. Done a lot of vertical climbing. Overall, I was happy with my result, where I come overall, and the race went well. So
yeah.
I didn't have any negative thoughts through the race, which could happen during a 100K race.
Yeah, genuinely it happens most of the time.
Most time, yep. Probably every race I've done.
It's learning how to deal with it. But yeah. So you felt like your preparation prepared you for it properly.
Mm.
So before we go into that part, or actually speaking of your preparation, I was just looking on your Strava today and I noticed you've got your yearly statistics, and I don't like to be a statistic nerd too much, but you've done close to, I think, 1,700 kilometres of running this year, but you've done something in the vicinity of, over 70,000 metres climbing?
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah, so which is, when you look at that as a ratio, that's a lot of climbing.
Yeah.
There's people that have done a lot more kilometres, but I don't know anyone that's done that kind of ratio of climbing.
I mean, the only reason I'd done that was because of Eiger, because it's so steep.
Yeah.
So I knew I had to do the vert. So I'd done a really solid vert month. And I just climb. And then I backed it off a bit, and then I hit the climbs again.
How much do you think that made a difference? Like, you know, did because I think there's some wisdom. Some people think that you do too much climbing and it can tend to slow you down. Or do you think you had the right strength?
I think I'd done. So I just didn't just do climbing. So I still done my speed work, which allowed me to keep my speed, I guess, because you still need, if you're going uphill, well, then you need to come downhill fast. So I had the pace going downhill, but I also had the legs conditioned, so the quads for the downhill, so they stayed strong. They didn't get sore, and then you just...
So you didn't blow up?
No, I didn't blow up. No, which stayed strong all day.
Absolutely. So. It sounds right. You've got your preparation really good. Like, we've been for a few runs together, and you've taken me out on some of your vicious training grounds around Cleland Conservation Park, most notably, and the loop there that you've... that has been nicknamed Mick's Loop, because it's, you know, you've pieced it all together. And I remember the first time I ran it with you, Mick's Loop, I think it's about a 17 kilometre loop with about 1,500 metres climbing. It's pretty savage. And I remember the first time I did it with you, I was ready to chicken out after about 9Ks, and you didn't give me that option. And so I managed to finish, and it was very helpful for my training as well. So So with going back to, actually, before I ask you more about your race, your IGART race, I'd like to maybe, let's go back in time a little bit and let's talk about where you started from when you started running. So you've, how long have you been running for?
I've been running since I was 32, so I'm 46 now, getting old.
Yeah.
And it started by a mate who rang me on a Saturday night and said, oh, I'm going up the Barossa to do a half marathon. Do you want to come up and run? I was like, oh, yeah, I'll give it a go. And didn't really think too much of it. And ran well, ran a 1:29. And I thought, wow. Well, if I can run a 1:29, and I sort of finished up in the field a bit with that sort of result, I guess. And I thought, well, I've done a half, I might as well do a full. So then I started training for a full and just continued on from there, I guess. So I've done a heap of road marathons, probably 8 to 10 road marathons.
Yep.
And then achieved the time that I wanted to in that. And then I got bored of that, so I decided to do some Ironmans, but I couldn't swim. So
it's essential.
Yeah, it is a bit. When you're going to do a 3.8k swim, it's a bit of an issue.
Yeah, I'm a terrible swimmer. Yeah, I think you're not alone. A lot of our distance runners are bad swimmers.
Bad swimmers. But once,
So carry on.
Yep. So I took up adult swimming classes for a year.
Yeah.
Determined to learn to swim. Got that nailed, and then got a bike and started riding, and then done, what was it, probably 6 or 7 Ironmans, I guess.
Oh, wow. Where did you do those? Any big ones?
Only in Australia. So all the big ones in Australia, Busselton, Melbourne, Cairns, Port Macquarie, that's the 4, I guess.
Ironman training is so, it's so much more time consuming, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a lot more. It takes over your life a bit, so you've got to be careful with it all. It does cause family issues if you're not careful. You're training morning and night, so you're sort of training, 15 to 20 hours a week, every week. Takes up a lot of time. So, yeah, I got to do what I wanted to do on that in my results. Never made it to Kona. I wasn't quick enough. It wasn't my main goal. The main goal was just to enjoy it. Yes, I got bored of that and then started taking up trail running. So I've been trail running now since 2014, I think. So not that long. 3 or 4 years. 4 years. 4 years now. So
yeah.
But I've done a few hundreds now, and 50s and 60s and 70s and yeah.
Oh wow. And how do you find Adelaide as a training ground for trail running?
I think it's brilliant. I think we're so lucky here. We can hit the flats if we want and run along the beach or along Linear Park. Or we can run in the hills, and we've got foothills all the way from Atherston to Blair that we can just create our own trails. There's plenty of vert if you want it. There's not long hills, compared to European hills.
Yeah, absolutely. But there's still some steep hills.
Some steep hills, but they're only fairly short. That's the only problem when you're trying to race in Europe. You just can't. You can't do that sort of hill.
When you're training for a race where you're going up into proper altitude, how high is Mount Lofty? Probably not even 700 metres above, which is most of these town races that you probably do don't even start at 700 metres.
No, they started at 1,000, I guess started at 1,000, I think it was.
Oh wow, so you've been running a while, so that's really, really cool. And I suppose in the time that you've been running in trail running specifically, you would have seen, you said 2014, you would have seen quite a few changes in trail running generally. Like, I mean, I've noticed, I mean, there's a lot more events and whatnot now, and I guess that's good. And the way I see it, and I've spoken to a few people, it creates more depth of runners and makes a bit more competition. Do you feel that's a good thing?
Yeah, I think it's good. I think, there's different people are taking on different events here. So you got your Migo and Trail SA and Sark and
yeah,
I think the only issue with Trail SA is that the events are getting too big, so they're getting a lot of people, which is great, really, really good, but they're going to need to accommodate the races so they don't get congested, and that's my only concern for that. They need to think differently, I think, on how they run their races.
Well, they recently had to cap one of their races. I think it was down at, where was it? Down south somewhere. And,
yep.
And so they've had to put a cap on these races. I think, yeah, you're probably right. But, I mean, they do try very hard to keep it sustainable and accessible. Yeah. And, Overall, I think that it's largely positive what trail running is doing.
Definitely, and, huge. I mean, seeing the numbers that are out is amazing, really. To get 1,000 runners out on the trails in SA is just insane. Yeah. It's just brilliant to see.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Yeah. So you've done quite a few races. What's your preferred distance in ultras? Like, you're not a 100-mile man as such, are you? But you like the climbing.
I haven't done a miler yet. Yeah. It's on the cards. But that's fairly, I keep low key, so it's on the cards and will happen. Probably my preferred distance is probably between 60 and 80, I guess. Because normally in a 100K race at that point, you're just like, I'm a bit over this, I'm stuffed, pull me out of here or shoot me because I've had enough. After Iger, you know, it went really well and I had no negative thoughts, and it was like, oh, I could keep running here. I feel really good. Generally 60 to 70, I guess, is probably my preferred distance.
Yeah, overall. It's still ultra, but it can be kind of a, if there's such a thing, like a fast ultra.
Faster, right. Yeah.
I definitely feel that too, in a sense. But so you're not going to give us any input into the 100 mile. So you've got a 100 miler on the back burner somewhere?
Yeah, it's on the back burner. But I keep fairly low key about my races and what I do, so there's no pressure on.
You do. You're a bit of an enigma. You don't even use your real name on Strava.
No, I don't post everything on Strava either. So.
Yeah, that's good. I think it's a good thing. I personally think Strava, I mean, it's a wonderful motivational tool for a lot of people, but I feel that it can be it can lead to a little bit of overtraining and a little bit of running too fast too often. Since I've gone into coaching, especially, I noticed, you know, because with all these segments and, you know, constantly going after segments and, you know, burning out. And it's great. Nothing nicer than getting that little crown next to your name, even if it's only for a day. Someone comes and chases it. But, you know, it's like every run becomes a competition.
Yeah.
And sometimes you've just got to go, look, I need to run slowly today.
Yeah.
So
you need to run for a reason, not just run to get Strava segments. I mean, I don't think I've got any Strava segments, but I never go out and look for a Strava segment. I just run for a reason. So.
Exactly. It is like I say, and the whole running boom, I think, is that we're experiencing now is because of things like Strava.
Yeah.
And I remember back in the day, a few years back, I used to use, what was it called, Runkeeper for a while. That was my first sort of, when I got into longer running, I was using Runkeeper. And in some ways, I thought it was better than Strava. Except Strava has that community aspect of it, you know, where you can give people kudos.
Yeah.
For some reason, that's a good thing. But it does feel nice, you know. We'll go back and we'll talk a little bit about your experience over at Iger. I'd like to go into a bit more depth if we can. So it you said it's over 6,000 meters elevation for 100 kilometers, And you've done a lot of altitude or vert training to deal with that. And so just take us through, maybe if you could take us through the race a little bit. Mm-hmm. And because I'm really interested to know about your mindset, because you mentioned that you stayed in a positive place. And for anyone that's done an ultra, that's really hard to do.
Mm-hmm. So we got to the race a couple of days early. I don't like to get there a week out. I think it's too long. You're just sort of walking around chomping at the bit and just using nervous energy that you don't need to use. So we visited other towns before we got there, and then just got there on the Thursday, I think, and then the race was Saturday morning. Race kicked off at 4, which was a very early start. And
4 a.m.?
Yeah, meant up at 2:30 and up with the wife, who wasn't overly impressed, and shot to the start line. But the start was good. It was you didn't have to get to the start early and try and get a position like, say, UTMB, where you would. There was only, I don't know, around 600 or so runners, I think. But there was a road section for the first few Ks, so you got to split up the field a fair bit, so you could put yourself in the right position from that point.
Before you were climbing.
Yeah, before you were climbing. Then you went bang into a climb and, you know, headlights on and off you go sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, just trudge away, wait for the sun to come up, and that come up fairly early over there, about 5:30. Sun was up, so it was...
Being summer, did it get hot?
Yeah, it was very hot. The whole the race itself was around 33 degrees. It was quite warm, and a lot of sections were exposed. So you're climbing up just steep climbs in the hot. If you didn't have enough water, you were gone. You know,
yeah, right. You were. So did you what was the aid stations like in terms of, so you could refuel your water? How far apart?
They were pretty good over there. They had probably I reckon over 100 Ks, probably had 10. There was a lot. There was a lot of aid stations, and they were well stocked. I mean, I didn't really use them. I just filled up once with water at the halfway point. That was my plan. I like to carry my own nutrition. I don't know, like to use what's at aid stations, because you don't know what you're having.
So your nutrition, you use Infinite.
Yeah, I use Infinite.
One of your sponsors.
I use Infinite for the whole race, but I also mix it up with gels, bars, and French fried chips, believe it or not. The little packets. Yeah, nice salty taste.
Yeah.
Just as a little reward, I guess. It's nice.
It's good, and the carbs in that are pretty good too, I suppose.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. Something different, so something savoury. So savoury is good when you have all that sweet stuff. So.
I love chips in a race. So you were, so it got quite hot. And so you're running up into the mountains. Like, you started at just over 1,000 metres, you reckon? And then so...
I think the maximum incline there was only 2,500, but you could actually... There were sections where the high points where you could start to feel the altitude sickness.
Yeah.
So, you know, I got a headache.
Especially heart rate was a bit higher. Exertion, you know?
So I did actually feel that. Just popped a couple of Panadol just to get rid of my headache sort of thing. And I knew that was the problem, because I've experienced before in other races in Norway when I've done a race over there.
Wow.
So I wasn't worried about it. I think I paced myself well on this race, and that's why it turned out well. So I spoke to other people who have done the race, and they said keep your legs for the 50K point, and then after 50, you know, start going for it then. So it was probably about 40Ks, and there was a downhill section, and I felt really good. I just felt fresh. So I put the pace on down there and end up, you know, passing probably a lot of people down that section. And
yeah, cool.
I think when you start to pass someone, you know, your confidence grows, and that just gives you a positive mindset the whole time. So I would see someone up ahead and think, yep, I've got them. Look for the next person that's a kilometre ahead and let's catch them.
The hunter.
Yeah, just hunting him down. So it worked out well. It worked out well. So. As the race continued on, I just kept picking up people along the way. I think I was back in about 70th position and probably picked up around 30-odd positions afterwards. So, yeah, started picking up a few. But around the, probably about the 85K mark, there was a storm that... come in, and I could see it in the distance, and you could hear it coming.
Oh, wow.
And it was pretty black and dark, and
a proper mountain storm.
Yeah, a proper one. And you've got like carbon fiber hiking sticks, so it's probably not ideal. So I was thinking, I need to get out off this mountain and down into the tree line, because it wasn't that far away, probably 3 or 4 Ks. So I just put the pace on, I guess, and flew down into the tree line, and then got to the checkpoint at 92Ks, and they actually stopped the race because of the storm. So we all got chauffeured into this little tent, and we ended up staying there for an hour and a half.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They sort of they buzzed us in with the timers when we come in, and then buzzed us back out when we got to go again. But they did cut the race 5K short because of the storm. But a lot of people, it was a bit frustrating. But you got to think of safety first. So it's quite treacherous up there, I guess, with the rain and slipperiness, and a lot of people actually got moved with gondolas to different checkpoints because it was too dangerous. So they missed a lot of the race. So we only missed 5Ks. The whole timing thing got a bit stuffed up, I guess you could say, when they buzzed us in and buzzed us out. I don't know what happened there, but we all finished around the same time, which we shouldn't have. So what did everyone do?
So they let you run the last a couple more Ks together?
Yeah, just down to the finish of the 2.5 Ks.
Did people race or did they stay together?
No, they raced. So I thought I'll start at the end and let everyone go.
Out of respect.
And then I could run my own race. But then I finished behind everyone else, which just didn't seem right. So I was sitting in about 35th and then ended up 43rd, which, I don't know.
It seems to me like you would expect to be some kind of gentleman's agreement, you know, like that.
Well, they buzz you in. Yeah, so they buzz you in with a timer. So it should be done by time. And then we got a 50-minute penalty on the 5Ks, which I thought was a bit harsh, but
it's a slow 5Ks.
Yeah, it's a very, very slow 5Ks.
I mean, that's an uphill 5K.
Yeah, that's right. So, in the end, that was cool. That's life. That's how it is.
It is the nature of trail running. I mean, they did the same at Buffalo this year. They stopped the race at the 50K mark.
Did they?
But only for people who didn't get there by a certain time.
Yep.
Luckily, I got through.
We rolled down into the finish, and the finisher's medal, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's a part of the Eiger Stone, so the Eiger Mountain. They collect the stone from there, and they drill a hole in it, and it's like this cool stone.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was kind of cool. It's like probably the best little medal I've got, I think.
It's good when they do something unique with the finisher's medal. It's like what
different
Ben Hockings has done with the Hubert 100.
Oh, yeah.
He uses the, they're wooden.
Yeah, they look cool.
Carved, I do sometimes, you see a lot of finishers medal that look very corporate and very much the same. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, people, there's always a lot of discussion about finishers medals, and I, especially in a big race, like, I want a medal. If I've done it, I feel, you know, like, it's not the reason I run, but it's quite often the last 10, 15 Ks, that's what I might think of that as a motivator to get me through.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it is nice to have, and I'll wear it around my neck for the remainder of the day, but then I won't wear it again. Then I'll hang it up somewhere, and that's it. Yeah. But I just think, I don't know. I mean, a lot of the cheaper races now, they don't have medals at all.
Yep.
Or you know, so yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, there's different opinions on it, I guess.
I think
you should get the option when you enter, if you want a medal or not, and it's just on your bib.
It's a good idea, actually.
That this person's paid for a medal, they get a medal. You know, for me, I don't want a medal. I've got a million medals, so I don't.
Yeah.
I just get thrown in the cupboard. So
yeah,
but, you know, other people want medals, and that's fine. That's cool. So
no, that's a really good point. I think it would be good that way. You could save some money that way. And I know a lot of big races, they either run out of medals, or they quite often end up with a surplus of medals, and then they can't really do anything with them.
No, it's just wasted. So,
I wanted to ask you, you're doing some coaching as well now. So you've been coaching through Up Coaching, Brendan Davies' outfit.
Yeah, so I had caught up with Brendan earlier this year over in Sydney, and he was looking for someone to take up coaching into SA.
Yeah.
And it's something I always wanted to do and want to do more of, I guess. I put my hand up for that, and I'm loving it at this stage. It's really good. It's quite rewarding, getting people to events and seeing them improve.
Yeah.
It's quite time consuming, but I really enjoy it. So it's something I hope to build on. Further on.
Do you do some Adelaide-based runners? Or
yeah, some Adelaide-based. I've got Adelaide, Mount Gambier, Canberra, Brisbane.
The beauty of the internet.
Yeah, all over. Yeah. And we just do FaceTime once a week and have a chat and catch up. And then I just set them the plan for the week.
Yep.
And we discuss the plan, discuss what happened the week before and just go from there. So it works really good.
Oh, that's good. So could you see yourself doing it full time?
Oh, definitely. That's where I want to head. So I'm an electrician by trade. I'm cutting down to 4 days a week as from hopefully next week.
Oh, great.
To take over coaching more, because it takes up a fair bit of time.
Yeah.
So I'll build the clients a bit more. I don't want to overcommit. I think you need, if someone's paying for a service, they need to be looked after.
Absolutely.
So I'll need to work less at work and more on the coaching. So.
Yeah. No, it can be very satisfying, especially, you know, when you help someone sort of exceed their own expectations. I personally think it's as rewarding as finishing one of my own races, you know, and I think you've got to have that level of commitment to be a good coach, because it's very, you know, it's important to that person. Mm. So, and if they're going to pay you, you've got to do it, you know, like,
That's right. It's just not a cut and paste program. It's a one-on-one.
There's a lot of guys out there that do that. And then, I mean, there's a lot of free training plans out there. And people, I think a lot of people just go, oh yeah, I'll just do a stock standard one off that I found on the internet.
Yeah.
But I think working with a real coach, someone with experience and like knowledge of, you can't replace that.
I think experience. I think experience is a lot.
Absolutely,
it's a lot more than a piece of paper.
Yeah.
To say you've done this course. I think experience, you can't beat that.
Yeah, and the things that you've learned through all your experiences, you know, and it builds up. And,
yeah.
I mean, you've done, like you say, you've done dozens of races, and absolutely. And I think I think from my personal experience, doing so much, when you start to work with more and more clients, you figure out what works differently motivationally for one client might not work for another client, you know, and helping them. Yeah, so...
Everyone's different, I guess. Every athlete's different. Situation.
I've asked this question a few times to our other coaches. I asked it of Brendan Davies the other day, actually. If you could pass on one piece of your best advice to a beginning trail runner, like what would it be? Like something that has sort of helped you or driven you as a runner.
Probably two things. As a beginner, I would say build up slowly. So don't think you can just go out and run a 100k race. Build up and get that base. So do a heap of 50k's, 60k's, 70k's, and then do the 100 and be successful at the 100. Don't go on up to 100 and blow up. You want to make it a good experience. So be smart about your build. So more for experienced runners that have been around for a little while is nutrition. If you speak to probably 90% of people, they've got no idea about nutrition, and you ask them how many carbs they get in per hour and they've got no idea, and they're not fueling. So you can run all you want and train all you want, but if you're not getting your nutrition in, well, it's potentially game over. It's not all the time game over, but to me it's 80% training and 20% nutrition. So it's an easy one, it's a given, but you've got to get it right, and it takes practice.
Yeah.
And knowledge.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I think nutrition, and my running has improved personally. As soon as I started taking nutrition more seriously, and my own running has improved heaps, you know. And it doesn't have to, running doesn't have to suck all the time. You know, people think it's sort of always hurt. But, you know, if you're eating right, you're going to keep yourself fueled and your recovery will be better too, because you don't deplete yourself as much.
Yep.
But, yeah, no, that's really good advice. It's different to some of the other advice I've got too. But just moving on. So do you have any plans for the remainder of this racing year so that you can tell us?
Not really. Well, the milers this year, so...
The secret miler.
Yeah, so that's on the cards. But that's about it. I don't want to commit to anything else. I think a miler's I've never done one, so I'm going to have a different approach to training. Going to be doing a lot of more back-to-back runs, Probably the Friday and the Sunday is my plan, two longer runs, just to get the K's on the legs.
Back to backs are fantastic, I think. Running that second day is so hard.
Yeah.
And it's good.
It is good. But that's probably it for this year. At the moment, it may change.
You'll have to do a fair bit more mileage, do you think? Do you think you'll be increasing your mileage a great deal?
A little bit. I mean, I'm one for quality rather than quantity.
Yep.
A lot of people do, to me, they do junk miles.
Yep.
They might say, oh, I do 100 k's a week or I do 150 k's a week, but how good are those kilometres? Are you fatigued every time you go out for a run and you're just getting no gain from it?
Yeah. I mean,
everyone's different. Some people can do a lot of k's, some people can't. For me, I probably do between 60 and 80 k's a week, so in general, that's not a lot for someone like myself. Probably people like myself probably do, you know, up around the 120 to 150 a week. I don't believe for me that's the right thing to do, so I don't do that.
Yeah.
For the miler, I'm probably going to be upping that to probably 100 k's a week, just because I think I'm going to need that time on legs, running in the dark. Getting used to that. So.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea. It's about good conditioning as opposed to just running yourself into fatigue all the time, isn't it?
And,
One of the things, I've trained a couple of guys that have done milers. I've never done a miler myself either. I would like to do one in the next 12 months or so. But one of the things that I have set, a task I generally set them, is to really increase their night running. Because no matter, unless you're someone like Jim Walmsley, or Scott Jurek or whatever, you're not going to finish in the day. You're going to end up doing probably running all night, you know. And that is so dealing with the sleep deprivation as well as dealing with having to keep moving, you know. And so I quite often will tell guys, you know, if you've worked a full week at work, go out and do your Friday night long run.
Yeah.
On your tight, you've had a tired week.
Yeah.
And then
that's what I'm planning. Is the Friday night.
Yeah.
Friday night and then a Sunday long run.
Yeah,
that's the goal.
It's probably good coming up now. The nights are not quite as short as long as running through a winter.
Yeah,
you know, yeah, that's all right. I'm not going to say it on the thing, but I have a sneaking suspicion I know what your event is that you're doing. But no, that's good. I was going to ask you about your sponsors. You've got a number of sponsors. Did you want to talk a little bit about who they are?
My major sponsor is La Sportiva.
Yep.
I really appreciate.
They've been around for a very long time, haven't they?
Yeah. I really like. So I used to run a different brand shoe, and found them very soft and wear out. It's one of the more common running shoes, I guess you say, or trail running shoes. I won't mention the name.
Yeah.
So I swapped to La Sportiva and gave them a go and found them really hard wearing. And I met Matt, who's the La Sportiva rep in Australia. I met him over in Annecy when I done the World Champs over there. And he said, you know, do you want to join the team? So that was 2015, I think. I've been lucky enough to be on that team now for 3 years, and
they've been good to you.
Yeah, they've been really good, really good. They supply your clothing and shoes, and it's really appreciated, and it's good quality stuff. So it's good quality shoes, good quality clothing. I'm really lucky, very lucky.
Yeah, awesome. And so they're your major sponsor. Any others that
Infinite Nutrition. They supply my nutrition for the long races. If you haven't thought about nutrition, have a think about Infinite. It's a simple product to take. It's just powder. You can custom mix it to whatever you want.
I think that's pretty awesome. That's pretty unique.
There's not too many people that do that, and it works out really cheap. If you work it out compared to gels, it's actually cheaper than gels. So it's something to look into. And it works a treat. I just find it easy. Just sits in my stomach. It's just simple to take. I could have it all day long.
Yeah.
I've been using it for years before I got sponsored by them. It just works.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
I do agree. I haven't had a lot of Infinite, but I do. When I've used it, I've actually really enjoyed it. I want to start using it a bit more often.
Yeah.
Yeah, so definitely easy to drink and yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
And there are any others you said
mentioned? So BKT Trail Store helped me out. They're a new trail store run by Beck and Keith. New trail store in Adelaide. It's good. It's our first trail store here.
Good little shop.
Yeah, it's a really cool shop actually. It's well decked out. Beck and Keith know what they're on about. Beck's actually at the moment over in America doing a big race over there called Bigfoot 200 Mile.
200 mile,
yeah.
Because 100 miles not enough.
No, it's a monster race, that one. So yeah. She's tracking well at the moment.
She's a beast of a runner.
Yeah. They're really nice people and really helpful, so I appreciate their help.
Yeah.
Also got pickle juice. Pickle juice is used for cramping. I use it for cramping, but I also use it for a bit of a relief from the sweet gels and stuff that you take on an ultra. So it's more of a savoury taste. But if you've got cramping coming on, then you just whack down this pickle juice and it tricks the mind into cramping. And it's a proven product, believe it or not. Steph Gaskell from Nutritional Strategies put me onto it, who has also helped me out a lot. It's a really simple, easy product to use.
No, that's great. I understand. I think I mentioned to you before, like pickle juice. I know it's good stuff, but I need more practice on it because it makes me gag. And I'd probably rather do a shot of tequila in a race than drink, because I have the same effect. But no, I'll give it another crack one of these days.
Yeah.
Just backtracking a little bit, you mentioned about the World Championships before. So what happened there? When was that?
It was back in 2015 over in Annecy in France. Just representing Australia on that one.
Was it for the trails? World Trails?
Yeah, World Trail Champs, yeah.
That's awesome.
86K one. Can't remember how much of it was. I think it was 5.57 or something like that. But it was, beautiful. Beautiful race, nice area.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, I went in with a bit of an injury. 3 weeks out, I strained my calf and... Unfortunately, that's life, that's running, and it made for a long race, but still enjoyed it. It was one of the races that I really enjoyed, just because I knew I couldn't run, I couldn't stride out.
Yeah.
So it was just more of a social run and take a few photos and meet a few people, so really enjoyed it in the end. So it wasn't a bad race, it was just an unfortunate thing, that's running.
Yeah.
That's, if you don't want to get injured, don't run.
It's pretty amazing that you got to represent Australia too, though.
Yeah, it was cool. It was a good experience. Really cool experience. Appreciated that one. So it was good.
So I wanted to ask you about hill climbing, because you being a bit of a vert master, maybe give us a little bit of insight into climbing hills and what you do. So how you do it?
So for Eiga, I got some poles, hiking poles. It's the first race I decided to use them because it's so much vert. I thought, I'm going to give these poles a go. So I got them and just YouTubed it on how to do it, and soon learned how to do it. Once you get out there and you give it a bit of a go, then I just trained for probably 4 months just with poles. Every long run, I had my poles, learned a good way to put them away, using the naked belt, which is a fairly new belt that's out at the moment. It's easy to get the poles away quickly. That's one of the biggest drawbacks with poles, is being able to carry them.
Yeah, I think that scares a lot of people off.
Yeah. So, when you get to the top of a climb, you want to be able to put them away quickly and get running. You don't want to be trying to muck around with your pack trying to get them in, so that worked well. So climbing, probably my advice on it is just short, sharp steps. So it's probably fairly obvious, but a lot of people try and stride out too much and push too hard. The more you're upright, the more oxygen you can get in and breathe, and you just take short, sharp steps and use the poles. So if you're going to be using poles, don't put the poles way out in front of you. Just keep them low, down near your feet.
Yep.
And just push off them. And I find it best to sort of do one by one rather than two by two, if you know what I mean. Like putting two down, then going forward. I just do one by one.
Oh yeah. I've seen that on the really really steep hills, people will revert to like almost like this cross country skiing.
Yeah. I tried that. It didn't work for me. I found one by one just worked better.
Yeah.
But
you reckon, so definitely getting used to using them a lot.
I practice 4 months every long run. And then even training runs during the week, if I was doing hill reps, I would just use them up. I wasn't using them downhill. I found I was either stabbing myself or tripping over the bloody thing. So,
I've done that.
So yeah. I gave up on the downhill with them. I think they would help and save your quads a bit if you can manage to run with them. If it's efficient to run with them. Everyone's different, so
yeah,
it's practice, I guess. And I did try a fair bit, but it just didn't work. So I decided, no, just let's get them away and run with them. So yeah, that's what worked for me.
No, I think that's some good advice. I've used poles, and in my biggest prep for them was just having a go, trial and error, and doing what felt comfortable. I mean, I watched quite a few YouTube videos, and because I really didn't know. And but you know, I think here in the Adelaide Hills, there's not really any races where you really need them.
No.
Because we're not climbing for that long. Although you do see people using them, and no judgment here. But it's but they're good. You can find a nice steep hill to run up and down, hey.
And
there's good practice.
There's plenty of hills here to do that. So
That's awesome. So what I might do is what. Wind it up in a second, and I'll do something that I do with everybody who I've interviewed lately, and I'm trying to turn it into a bit of a thing, I suppose, and that's finish off with the fast five questions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I hit you with five questions, and you've got to give them. I may change the questions down the track, but at the moment these seem to work pretty well. Shortest answer you can give me.
Uh-huh.
So question one, favorite running film.
Jeez.
If you have
Forrest Gump. Yeah.
Forrest Gump.
Yeah, because that's sort of my nickname anyway. I call myself RFR.
Run Forrest Run.
Yeah, Run Forrest Run.
Oh,
so,
cool.
Yep.
Oh, it's good. I think, look, the beard, everything. Yeah, he sums up a lot about running, even though it's not even a running film. But it's good. You're not the first person to say that. I think this is a pretty easy answer, but question two is roads or trails?
Yeah, trails. I've been there, done that, roads, over that, definitely trails.
Yeah. Question three, I want you to finish this sentence for me. Running gives me...
A sense of achievement.
A sense of achievement. That's a good one. Question four, what is your bucket list race if you haven't run it yet?
I guess the UTMB would be one, although I think it would be quite crowded. I'm planning on doing Lovato next year, and I think that's going to be a bit of a bucket list.
Lovato, where's that?
That's over in Italy. It's 120Ks. La Sportiva is sponsoring it, so for the first time this year. So I'm keen to do that, and also one in Iceland 3 weeks later.
Oh, wow.
That's the plan for next year. So,
so you've got a big bucket.
Yeah, big bucket. You only live once, so go for it.
Well, it's another opportunity for a holiday, as you say.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Yeah. All right, in question five, the last kilometre, what is your favourite post-race treat?
Post-race would be pizza.
Pizza?
Yeah, pizza. Probably not that night after a race, because I'm just a bit dead, I guess, normally. Just the next day, pizza and a beer.
Pizza and a beer. Yep. And what's your favourite type of pizza?
Oh, just supreme, as much as possible on it. Throw it on.
Replenish. It's got basically got everything. You've got a bit of meat for protein. You've got some plenty of carbs.
That's right.
No, that's great. I am a fan of the pizza as well. No, Mick, that's really awesome. Thank you for coming and chatting to me and sharing your Eiger experience and all that and all your knowledge. And I will. We'll have to keep everyone posted about the mysterious miler that's coming up in the near future.
No problem. No worries. All right.
Cool. All right, man.
No worries.
Take care.
All right. Catch ya. Bye bye.
I hope you really enjoyed that chat with Mick. Such an amazing story of his Eiger experience. And I also hope that you're really enjoying these episodes of the podcast. Now, I really enjoy bringing them to you And I enjoy talking about running. It's my number one passion. And one of the things I do with my passion is I'm a coach. And I specialize in all distances. So if you would love me to help you to improve your running, just hit me up via the Facebook page, Distance Runners Unlimited. Or you can send me an email, distancerunnersunlimited@gmail.com. And maybe I can help you become the best runner you can be. Thanks for listening. See you later.